Hello everyone, Simon Jacobson here, and we'll be speaking about soul-driven problem solving. Problem solving, a very common word that is part and parcel of human beings from the beginning of history. We've had problems and we've always seeked to find ways to solve our problems. So we're going to talk about different ways that humans solve problems. Some of them are beautiful, some of them are comical, some of them are extravagant, some are extreme, and either way, they reflect the human pursuit to try to create a better life. So whatever it's, whether it's a personal problem, whether it's a family problem, whether it's a communal problem, whether it's a psychological, an emotional one, a physical one, we are problem solvers. That's what human beings are. The question is, how do we learn to solve problems? So, of course, the first immediate place we learn is from our parents. Those are the first adults that we're exposed to, and we see how they solve a problem. Then from our educators, from our friends, from society. Now, if the people who taught us, who were the role models in solving problems, were not good problem solvers, then we most likely are going to be replicating their mistakes, unless we correct it. You even look in the human, in the natural world, you see, I was just seeing a video a few weeks ago how monkeys use a stone to crack open nuts. So, it looks so human. And then you see that the little kids are looking at their parents and learning from them. You see how in the animal kingdom, the young learn how to hunt, how to breed. So many different things they learn from their adults. Now, in the natural world, I'm not worried about it because there's a higher program that regulates things and they don't make mistakes. Or if they do, they correct them very quickly. We humans, because we have a much wider arsenal and array of options, we make many mistakes. And what we're going to be talking about is the difference between a soul-driven problem solving as opposed to a body-driven problem solving. It's like two perspectives. And that's going to be our study in contrast. But I wanted to first review a few problem solving. Now, we know we can solve problems by symptoms. You see a problem. You see a leak, you seal the leak. You see you have some pain, you take a painkiller. You have a little blood, a Band-Aid. So we have these short-term remedial approaches that solve problems for the moment. Then, of course, there's another way of solving problems. It's called preventive medicine. That is where we are doing things that prevent and preempt problems, which, of course, everyone would agree is a far better approach. But it's what they call the longer, shorter road. Because there it's not just about waiting for the problem and then quickly fixing it. It's looking for a comprehensive approach that will create something healthy that will preempt and prevent unhealthy things from happening. Now, no one's arguing that there isn't room and value for short-term problem solving when the situation requires that. Sometimes you need that for temporary until you develop a longer-term solution, a longer-term remedy. But if you think of it in a full picture of things, you really want to have in your life all available remedies, all available solutions, so you can address each situation based on what their situation is. So we, as I said, are going to talk about two particular models, but I want to go still further a bit more into the approach of problem solving. I mentioned symptom versus root-based, called symptomatic versus preventive, not remedial, but dealing with the root of the issue. There are other ways we solve problems, and that is by what's convenient. Very often, because a problem can be either too overwhelming or we don't want to be bothered by it, so we look for the easy approach. This overlaps with sometimes looking for the symptomatic approach. The classic joke or story they tell from Chelem is used a lot in the world of healing. Someone's looking for his keys that he lost. It's at night. A friend comes by and says, "Let me help you look. Let's retrace the steps. Where'd you lose them?" And he points 100 yards away. "So why are you looking here?" He says, "Because here's where the light is shining." What is that meant to say? That we often look for solutions in the place where the light shines, where it's most obvious. And where the real place to look at, where the real solution may lay, we don't look there. because it's inconvenient, it's uncomfortable. They tell that joke of the two Jews who both have sciatica and they have a foot problem, they have pain in their foot. They go to a foot doctor. And one of them is waiting in the waiting room. They go to support each other. And suddenly he hears cries and screams, because obviously the doctor's touching and feeling, and it's very painful, very raw and sensitive. He's yelling and screaming, and he's saying to himself, oh no, assume me, I'm next. Anyway, finally the guy comes out, he's limping, and he's in pain. He says, don't ask. Once the doctor started touching and feeling, the sensitive nerve really started acting up, and it was a murder. But, you know, I got through it. So brace yourself. The second Jew goes into the doctor. His friend is sitting and waiting. It's quiet, quiet. A few minutes pass, nothing. What's going on? Say they have the same condition. Here he was screaming in pain. Finally, the Jew comes out smiling. And his friend says to him, what happened? Why come you didn't scream or yell like I did? He says, I showed him the other foot. So the guy says, I'm not going to show the doctor where the tooth that's hurting or where the nerve that's hurting. I'm going to show him the other foot. That's easy ways of avoiding. We call it denial, basically. Is it solving a problem? No, it's not solving a problem. If it was really a completely superficial issue, and that's the approach we take, okay. But if it's not a superficial issue, that's not going to solve the problem because you're going to have to go back to the doctor and maybe get worse next time, God forbid. But that's how human beings, that's part of the insanity I said before, comical solutions. We find comical solutions. Chelem, which you probably know traditionally is this the folklore of Chelem, the cities of Chelem, the fools of Chelem they're called. They say it was really actually wise people in Chelem and their neighbors made up this whole folklore of the fools of Chelem. So they have another one. Chelem was, of course, a little old town, old shtetl, and it was from the days before there were automobiles and trucks and so on. They used to go with horses, with donkeys, maybe with a wagon. So they had a rickety wooden bridge that led into Chelem. Okay, and fine. But then when automobiles and vehicles started being built, which weighed a lot more than a regular wagon or a horse or a few horses, what started happening was a problem. Cars would ride on this bridge. The bridge was not built for that, so there would be accidents. The bridge would collapse. What did the Chelem people do? They kept rebuilding. Fools. They kept trying to fix the bridge and rebuilding it the way it was first built. As we all know, a problem, a solution cannot come from the same problem that created that problem. The solution has to come from outside the system. But that's what they did. They finally had a big committee meeting. What do we do? We have these people getting hurt. They're suing us. Some are ending up in the hospital. Some are really became injured. We have to do something about this. So some said maybe we forbid cars and trucks from entering. Only wagons, only thing that below a certain weight, and that's that. Others said, how could you do that? It's a whole new opportunity. Some said, you know, let them stop outside the city and let them bring everything over the bridge. Obviously, no one came up with the thought that maybe build a better bridge. Finally, they had a consensus. You know what the consensus was? We're going to move the bridge. We're going to move the hospital right near the bridge. So when there's an accident, right away, you don't have to schlep them across town. You bring them straight into the hospital. Now, we laugh. It sounds ridiculous. But you know what? Very often, that's how we solve problems. We solve problems conveniently. Because we don't want to be bothered. We minimize the issue. Now, there are times where issue, as I said, is superficial. That's one thing. And we shouldn't be hypochondriacs and exaggerate every particular problem. But very often a problem, if you don't nip it in the bud, can end up being much bigger. And we do this mistake all the time. I hear this all the time. And in many ways, we don't want to create discomfort. So when, let's say, you're negotiating a deal with someone or you're building a business, you want it to be easy. You don't want to rock the boat. So you overlook certain things and you say, you know what, it'll work itself out. But there's no real agreement and no real boundaries and no real job descriptions. This can happen in other type of situations, especially when there's conflict. And instead of really remedying something in a proper way, I'm not even getting to preventive or remedial, but either way, we overlook because it's easier, it's more convenient. Why should we confront? So it's like someone who has a small infection, God forbid, and they ignore it. So if God helps, it goes away. The natural immunity system will take care of the problem and solve it. But if you don't do anything with it, it could also happen, it starts festering, it starts spreading. If you were immediately to nip it in the bud and you had done something, you could avoid serious illness. As they say today, many, many serious death, life-threatening illnesses begin with one little small problem that was not addressed. And then it gets out of control. Think of it like a little fire starts somewhere. You don't do anything, it can turn into a blaze. It can burn down your whole, God forbid, a whole building. You put it out. You control it quickly, immediately. So this is part of the human condition. As I said, sometimes it's comical, sometimes it's tragic. Well, you think back and said, if I only did a few A, B, C, D, it could have prevented who knows how much aggravation and how much loss and so on and so forth, and even worse, devastation and destruction. So why is it that we behave that way, besides the fact that it's easy, and what can we do about it? That's the big question. So what I'm proposing here, it's not just it's different learning tricks of the trade. Okay, you know what? Till now you solved the problem this way. Here's a new tip. And these are many tips out there to do all kinds of different things. It's actually two different perspectives on life. There's the body perspective, the body-driven problem solving, and there's soul-driven problem solving. Body-driven problem solving is looking at things from a body, from the eyes of the body. Now, how does the body look at things? With our sensory tools. We have sensory tools. Our first initial way of looking at everything is through our eyes, our ears, our taste, touch, and smell. You see something, you see a problem, you try to remedy it. You hear something, taste, touch, and smell. Then we have some supersensory, things that are more instinctive, intuitive. You get a feeling, you use your mind to intellectually analyze, probe, evaluate. And that's how we solve problems. But what are we using? Again, we're using empirical experiences, empirical observations, perhaps witnesses and other evidence, and our own experiences. But they're all limited, especially considering our subjectivity that could also blind us, can bias and prejudice us. That's body-like. Why is it body-like? Because you're using your immediate body tools. There's a whole, however, another resource within us all. We'll call it the soul. The soul is a voice within you. It's a voice that thinks and behaves very differently than the body. And in this way, the body is primarily a survivor. It functions and survives. I should say functional and survival. The body, in a healthy body, is functioning well, fluidly, whether it's our breathing, whether it's our digestive systems, whether it's our circulatory systems, whether it's our nervous systems. You eat a good diet. You exercise. Generally, a good hygiene creates a good, smooth running machine. No different than any appliance, except of course it's a body. What's missing? What's missing is it's all about survival and about functionality. For example, if you ask the body, what's the vision of your life? What do you look forward to? A body doesn't think that way. A body with our sensory, immediate sensory, looks at right now, what do I need? What do I see? That's why the body can so easily, when I say body, just for the record, I don't just mean physical body, the bones and the skin and so on. I mean physical approach to life. It's a perspective. It's a materialistic perspective on life. So it looks at what it needs immediately. You see something, it attracts you, it seduces you, you go for it. With a little intelligence, you say, maybe I should check it out. But essentially, it's about pleasure principle, enjoying yourself, and taking advantage of all opportunities to be as a happy and as pleasurable person as you can. A soul is a transcendent entity. It looks with the eyes of transcendence. It does not look at what's in it for me. It doesn't look at how can I take advantage. It doesn't look at filling needs. It looks at what does it give. Transcendence. What purpose does it serve? What higher vision and higher cause does it answer to? A very different way of looking at things. So take an example. You meet somebody. The body right away looks in terms of, okay, how can I get something from this person? Maybe they'll become a potential client or customer. Maybe there are other things I can receive from that person. No, maybe not. The soul looks at what opportunity has been presented here that both of us can achieve something to make the world a little better place. How can I learn from this person? How can I give something to them, serve them in a certain way? Do you see the difference? So one is by definition myopic. One by definition is what I get from it and what is relevant right now, here and now. It could also be long-term planning, but it's still at the end of the day about survival, about functionality. And the soul has a bird's eye view. A bird's eye view of yourself, of life. So when it looks at something, it looks from that perspective. So now tell me, when you have a problem, the difference between solutions. The body-like solution will look at, okay, what can I do right now to fix the situation, to remedy? Short-term, symptomatic, maybe just for the media, because the body looks at what's convenient. The soul looks at, no, what's right, not what's convenient, and not what's in it for me. Looks what is the best thing to be done. So it takes a few examples. An example, parents and children. One that comes my way very often, I'm sure everybody deals with. What is good for your children? You see that it's dealing with an issue or dilemma. Very many parents, they have a problem with a child that's, let's say, a problem child, or the child going through some type of dilemma. Let's say they're too much on the internet. They're not behaving at school. What do we do? If we look with a body-like approach, we look at how can we stop this annoying situation. Sometimes it's grounding the child. Sometimes it's ignoring it. Make believe it's going to go away. Sometimes it's blaming others. Sometimes it's discipline, punishing the child. You're looking at what's convenient. What can I do right now? My child is crying. How do I stop it from crying? The soul looks at what is the needs of this child. What is this teaching me? What kind of wake-up call is my child's needs? Maybe there's something missing here. Maybe we're not nurturing the child properly. Maybe the child has needs that are not being met. Again, this doesn't mean you can't use the first short term, but the soul thinks right away, is there a bigger picture here? And as a result, its problem that it looks for, the solution rather that it looks for the problem, is a very different type of solution. And you literally can take case studies and see how soul perspective, soul driven problem solving is different than body driven problem solving. Let's take a relationship, marriage, a couple. They've got issues. Yeah, one of them says, we're not having enough intimacy. The other one's saying, we have too much. One is saying, he's not there for me. He doesn't communicate with me. He has another life. The other one is saying, the person's too much on my back. So we know men-women issues have been going on from the beginning of time. You have books and best-selling books. And as I always say, a best-selling book is the best indicator you haven't found a solution. That's why the books keep selling. Because if one finally found a solution, you wouldn't need another book. So we know from the beginning of time, the historical differences. Most solutions, look at them, and you'll see most people left to their own devices, without guidance, look for the quick fix, or what's as obvious, and sometimes completely wrong. Some of us will react with anger to the spouse that's not serving our needs. Others will react with silence. And then there's the passive-aggressive approach. We fall back on devices and tools that we either picked up from parents, from educators, from others, or we just picked up in the street, or it's our own instincts that are not necessarily based on anything. And usually what happens, it doesn't solve the problem. It often makes the problem worse. Because then you start growing apart, because you see every time this person reacts, every time I do this, that person reacts that way. You know what? I don't want to even deal with it. How does the soul look at it? The soul steps back with humility. It's not about me. It's not about ego. It's about what is good, what is right for me, for my spouse. Maybe I should go talk to somebody. Maybe I'm doing things wrong. Maybe it's not always the other person. Maybe I'm not responding correctly. Maybe even if it is the other person, am I responding the correct way? That's how the soul thinks. So it's like a long-term strategist. Think of it that way. It's a broader perspective. It takes the ego out of the picture as much as possible. And then you look for a solution. It's not solution what's convenient, or what's easy, or what's self-serving. The solution will be connected to something broader. Win-win. We're in a relationship. It's not a battle between us. If it's good for her or good for him, it'll be good for me. And vice versa. So children, relationships, at work. You have a run-in with a coworker, with an employer, with an employee. You know, there's all kinds of scenarios. And all of them, the same idea. There's the body-driven solution, there's the soul-driven one. The body is immediate, short-term, self-serving, and so on. And the soul is much more of a bigger picture, objective, will get more advice and consult, and so on. So what you see from this is that we have options. That's the most important thing to know. We have options. We're not stuck. We have to dig deeper and find, and of course I'm going to talk about how one accesses that soul voice inside of you. Because it's a deeper inner voice that's available. And when you begin to get used to it, you'll find it actually provides solutions and provides an approach that's far more gratifying and far more enriching and far more comprehensive. But it's learning to, we have to think in terms, it's not always about the quick and easy way to go. Those that learn to train themselves this way, doesn't mean we don't make mistakes, but when we make a mistake, we also address the problem. I'll give you another example. This is an example that really important, especially in therapeutic situations and relationships, when there's trust matters, trust. Very often trust is an issue where people feel there's lack of trust. That could often be because we grew up in a home that was not, that we didn't cultivate trust, we didn't trust our parents. It was a very erratic life where we didn't feel we could trust the people who were supposed to nurture us. Without going into all the analysis of the roots of it, but life can be this lack of trust. Very many people who grew up in an environment where there was no trust, and remember, children by nature are trusting. You have to do a lot to get rid of that trust, which means you have to continuously, essentially assault their vulnerability where they finally say, you know what, I got to protect myself. And children don't know how to protect themselves. So what happens often is the other extreme. Someone who's hurt suddenly builds up, not suddenly, over years, builds up layers of armor, and they protect themselves. If they're really good at it, you won't know. They know how to smile, they know how to put on the masks, all the disguises, and all the camouflages in order to be able to get by. But really, there can be armor, very heavy layers of armor. And when you get closer to a person, you start seeing there's blocks, they don't let you in. And because they're not trusting, they're afraid, and they've been hurt. Why would they let you in? So suddenly the lack of trust creates a situation where you really have your guard up. Now, sometimes when not guided properly, people like in that situation will say, you want me to trust you? You got to be perfect. You cannot make a mistake. Because one mistake, then I see you couldn't, I can't trust you. People say that. And often someone that loves them and cares about them buy into that and say, you know what? I'm going to be perfect. You walk on eggshells. And you try everything you can to try to be as perfect as you can. And the fact of the matter is nobody's perfect. So there's no way you can sustain it. But the other person is thinking, I have found the perfect knight in shining armor who's saving me. Well, two things are going wrong here. Number one, there's no perfection. Number one, there's no saving. You can be there for somebody. You can help them. But you want to help them help themselves. You don't want to become their crutch and their drug. So what happens in these scenarios? Either it falls apart because at some point the person will not be perfect and the other one say, you see, I couldn't trust you, we're not perfect. You did not save me. You promised me. And there's sometimes a tendency, the protector personality likes to protect, likes to save, likes to solve the problem. But what kind of problem was solved? It wasn't really solved. So what is the soul approach to this? That's the body-driven approach. To try to figure out, okay, I'll be perfect. I'll lie if I'm not perfect. I'll hide it. I'll protect. I won't let the person face real reality because they've been hurt too much. What's the soul-driven approach? Soul-driven approach says, there's no such thing as perfection, my friend. Trust is built not on perfection. What is it built on? Accountability. Now, I am sure I will make a mistake or two. I'll try not to, but I'm sure I will. But I will tell you and assure you and promise you that I will be accountable. That if I make a mistake, I'll acknowledge it and I'll find ways to correct it. Now, everybody, of course, would love number one. It's much easier. Just be perfect. Most people, I ask them, if you had one request of God, what would it be? They say, I have a perfect life. No problems. I said, no, you have to ask something much deeper. You know what you have to ask for? That if that will, when you have a problem, you should have the strength to deal with the problem. Because that's far more realistic and actually far more empowering. Because this way, it's all predicated on no problems. And as soon as there's a problem, you're left empty-handed. You don't have tools. Ask for tools. Accountability. That I will do something about it. And trust is built on accountability. So both for the person who suffered of no trust and for the person who's providing it, it's that accountability is the key. And it's not about saving the person. It's showing consistency that you're there for them. You support them. You cannot replace them. You can't replace their pain. There's no way you can get rid of it. You can try to soothe, support, try to calm, console. But at the end of the day, dignity of a human being requires that you're helping them help themselves. And they help you help them help themselves. And that's the way it works. So that's a soul-based way of dealing with an issue of that nature. You can go down the line in any problem in life. You can look for solutions. You'll find some solutions that are altogether not even body-based. They're altogether ridiculous. You could say that's part of the body's folly as well. Then there's soul-based. In soul-based itself, there are many, many levels as well as one grows. So how does one discover that voice? How do we get away from our knee-jerk? Because the knee-jerk reaction to any problem is what you've been shaped, is what you have available to you. Like someone will say, hey, something fell down from a wall. So you'll say, what do I have? I have a nail, I have a hammer, let me knock it in. But maybe you need a screw for it to be permanent. But that's what I have right now. That's where the light is shining. Soul-based will say, no, okay, short-term, maybe I'll do something that will remedy it for now, but I'm going to have to find the screws, I'll have to find other ways to secure that thing. It shouldn't fall down again. So that's our knee-jerk approach, the status quo, what you have available in your existing tool chest. In this case, existing resources that you have based on your education, based on your parents, based on friends, based on what you know, which could be quite limited. What is soul-based and how do you get to the soul? So you need to discover a new voice, or maybe not a new voice. I should correct myself. Like I always tell the story with Michelangelo. The voice is in there. The angels are trapped in there. You just have to carve and set them free. So you have to discover this inner voice. I'll tell you right now that all of us can find it not that difficult. There are things in life that touch you right now. You don't even have to go cultivate it. I'm going to now explain how we cultivate it. But the first step is recognizing that you have such a voice. You know where you have such a voice? When you have two options and one says, do I do a short term, but I know that may cause long-term damage? Or do I need long-term advice? Even the body understands that. You go to a doctor with a medical situation. The doctor says, look, we can do a few things that relieve the pain, solve the problem right now, but there may be bigger long-term issues. And then we'll see in a few months. Sometimes you'll say, what can we do now to make sure it doesn't come back? We may need some intervention. We may need medication. We may need more testing. We may need some even surgery, even something intrusive. So right there, a person who's an intelligent person, same thing in business advice. We have a problem in the business. Okay, here's short-term, but someone says short-term is not really going to work. All of us can relate to that. That means that I wouldn't call necessarily soul thinking, but a part of you that's more than your body is thinking. Longer-term strategy, that even though short-term it may be inconvenient, but right now the right time is to really plan ahead. So we all have that capacity, and we all can relate to it. The question is cultivating that it should become your go-to. Your modus operandi that you use on an ongoing basis and not fall back to your knee-jerk reactions that are just coming from immediate instincts and from survival or functional mode. So we're moving from a functionality approach to a core essential approach. That's another way of saying body-driven problem solving, soul-driven problem solving. Another place where you see that voice when you hear music, when you fall in love, when you feel love, romance, anything transcendent in your life, you travel, a sense of magic, a magical moment, a moment of awe, These are all not body-based. These are not functional survival voices, tools. These are your transcendent soulful tools. And they allow you to go beyond functionality to what? To transcendent, to root core essential values. Looking with a different set of eyes. Every one of us have places where our soul's already being active. Again, it may not be your dominant voice, but it's there. Maybe weekends, maybe in your forms of escape. The question now is, how do you cultivate that voice to become, as I say, a dominant force in your life? That when you wake up in the morning, or any time during the day, or in the evening, and you're faced with the situation, that voice is available to you to ask its opinion. You're always going to have your instinctive, impulsive, functional survival voice. But now you'll have an additional resource, an additional tool in your arsenal. So when you talk about, go back to functional survival, body-driven approaches, that's very impulsive, as I mentioned. Very short-term, what's good for me. What about the soul is very reflective. It pauses. It doesn't act quickly. Obviously, emergencies, you have to act quickly, but beyond that, it pauses, it reflects, deliberates before you come to a conclusion. So how do you cultivate that voice? So first, identify things in your life. Make a list. Here are things. You can make a list. Make two columns on a piece of paper and write, these are body-driven instincts or body-driven signs that I know I have. These are soul-driven. And the ones you don't know, put them in the middle column and say, I don't know yet, undecided, we'll figure it out. You can figure it out pretty quickly by the criteria I mentioned. Is it self-serving? Is it good for the greater cause? Is it short-term? Is it just to get rid of the problem quickly? So you have now two columns, and you want to identify the things that are the transcendent, and you want to make them, you want to develop and cultivate and broaden and expand them. And how do you do that? You cultivate it by cultivating your soul. You cultivate your soul by immersing it in transcendent experiences. What's a transcendent experience? Being charitable. Because it takes it away from you and focuses on another. Volunteering. Reading ideas, especially spiritual ideas, that are not about self-serving, what will make you a little more money or what will give you a little more pleasure, but thinking of the big cosmic picture of life. Studying. Praying. Anything that focuses you away from your immediate needs and looks at the bigger picture, looks at what is the good of others, is training your soul to think in that direction. And there are more. There's the spa, as I often mention, study, prayer, actions. Three things, studying spiritual and ideas that are beyond you. Prayer, praying to a force beyond yourself, accountability, an emotional communication with his transcendent forces that are higher power, God, higher reality, and actions, good deeds, kind deeds, charitable deeds, virtue. These are the three pillars. Sometimes they're compared to thought, speech, and action. Thought being the study, speech is prayer, praying, and the actions, the good actions. So they basically include, encompass all our three primary ways of, not primary, only ways of expression. We either think about something, we speak about it, or we act on it. Another thing is to be around people who are soul-driven people. People who you see are driven by vision, by a cause, not by the immediate. You incubate yourself around people like that, and you learn from them by osmosis. You get trained by them, either directly or indirectly. That's yet another way how you cultivate that voice. Another way, find a mentor, someone you can talk to. So even when you have a solution to a problem, ask. And the mentor might point out to you, you know what, that's a good quick solution, short term. But you have to look at A, B, C, D. That's yet another. Friends as well. Basically, it's everything about going outside of yourself and looking for that support, looking for other approaches that are beyond your own immediate focus. And the last thing you want to do is be the final judge. You want that advice. You want that mentorship. You want that consultation. And you want to listen. You can listen to different opinions and then come to the best one. That's soul thinking. And that's soul problem solving. I assure you, you take it that way, you have a whole new way of looking at a problem. I deal with this almost on a daily basis. People come to me with a problem. I ask them, what have you done about it? They give you a list. Some of them are very good. They've done things. At least we know that that was tried. I try to suggest something that they did not think of, either because they're part of the situation they didn't think out of the box, or for whatever other reason. And you go through it and you see if they're open. You hope that they're open. And that's all you really want them to be, open to another solution. And some people say, no, I tried everything. You can't tell me anything new. And if you do, they either dismiss it, that's not worth talking about, or it's something I tried already, you're just rephrasing it. The key is to listen. And from the point of view of the one who's offering the advice, is to try to present in a way that the person can hear it. If they're really locked and they're so adamant about their position, sometimes you have to wait, you have to plant the seed. Sometimes say, maybe you shouldn't be so assured, maybe there's another approach. At the end of the day, you're going to do what you want, so might as well look at all the options. No, I don't have to look at all the options. What do you have to lose? If you have five options, look at the five options. You may come back to the same conclusion that you started off before you had the other options. As soon as I hear someone resist that, I say, why? Why would they resist that? They may come away with the best option. They may even be back to that option because they compared it. And that was the best one, the one that they initially thought of. What's the fear? The fear is that you may be wrong. The fear may make you too uncomfortable. The fear is you just want to invest a little amount of time. You don't want to get over immersed with it. There's all kinds of fears. So the fact is that we all have the option. And there are many different tools. I just mentioned some. There are more that makes you into a soul-driven type of person. And frankly, it's not just about problem solving. A soul-driven, eyes of the soul, see everything differently. Not just problems. Not just solutions to problems. It just looks at things in a broader way. You see people, you don't react that quickly. You wait to hear more. You give people a benefit of the doubt. You know, you're not naive. You don't just buy into things. You're not jaded. It gives you a perspective to look at things and you can feel a lot more confident that you're looking at the full picture. You're being thorough, different angles. And that makes you also more trustworthy to yourself and to others, because it's not like you made a quick move and a quick solution. You can go back and say, you know what? I did look at all the options and I tried my best. I may have been wrong, but I looked at all the options. The last thing you want to find out is you didn't look at all the options, you just acted. And had you taken another option, it may have solved the whole issue, or it may have been a much better solution. But goal here is not to be hard on ourselves. The goal here is to learn from our experiences. Every experience is an education. And here again, the body-driven approach doesn't see it that way. It doesn't think in terms of holistic approach. It doesn't think of the narrative we spoke about last week, that your life is a narrative. There are many frames in it. The body looks right now. What am I getting right now? Am I comfortable? Not comfortable. The soul will look at, not now, what about tomorrow? Maybe the discomfort today is necessary for me to be comfortable tomorrow, because that's the effort I have to invest in order to achieve that goal. So wherever you look, you're going to find these two different approaches. With the Meaningful Life Center, what we do is help people train them in this direction. In this class, in other classes, the programs that we produce, the Soul Gym that you've seen, which offers different types of tools to be able to exercise your soul and your psyche and your emotions. We just recently released a Midlife Miracle. It's a soft launch of a new course to discover your personal mission. Check it out on our website, meaningfullife.com. And we're in the process of building and developing many different other such tools. We obviously would love your input. But that's what we do. That's what I do. It's our passion. It's our mission. And it's actually an expansive mission. It's a soul mission. It's not just a body mission. It's about how we make the world a better place, how we use our skills, our tools, my skills, to help the human race in some way. Now, we all have our needs. We're not denying that. The question is, where are you going to put your focus? Where is your primary focus? What's dominant? And the dominant should be the soul-driven approach, to look at things from the eyes of the soul. Besides everything else, that you'll come to better solutions, and a healthier approach, it's also deeply gratifying because you feel that you're looking at the world from the inside out, not from the outside in. It's not like, oh, I see something, I react, which of course is body driven. I react. Reactive means a quick remedy to whatever I see. I plug the hole. The soul approach is you're looking from the inside out. It's not like you're a victim or product of circumstances. You control circumstances. You actually create circumstances. And most importantly, you take control of circumstances when they come your way. Three types of people, as I often mention. People who make things happen, people who watch things happen, and people who ask, what happened? The soul-driven approach makes things happen. And when something happens to you, you turn it around. You don't let it become you don't let it control you. You turn around and control it. That's the key to leadership. You turn it around. What can you learn from it? How can you grow from it? How can it make you and the people around you better? That's how you think about it. Even a mistake, a setback, goes into that category. And all this adds up to a new approach to life, to every part of our lives, our relationships, our families, our work, those casual interactions, how we travel, who we meet with, and how we talk to people, and how we look at everything in the world around us. And when we do it that way, we come away with a whole new approach to everything. Please go to meaningfullife.com and you'll find a lot more material and resources in this direction. That's what we do. We provide those resources to help us all see. First of all, help us all access and get in touch with and trust the inner voice of your soul. And then listen to it. Learn to listen to it. It will teach you wonders about life. It will teach you wonders about people. When you meet a person, do you see the body? Okay, an attractive person. They may have some interesting things to say. But can you see their soul? Can you see their psyche? Can you see their personality? And can they see yours? You see the difference? One is you're seeing 1% of the surface. The other is you're seeing what's beneath the surface, under the dashboard. And you're accessing it, and you have a relationship with it. So much richer, so much more profound. It's really living life to the fullest possible in our ability. That's soul-driven approach. And included in that is when there's a problem, you go into that soul, you go into the inner engine room. And how do I rewire it there instead of just dealing with the symptoms on the outside as we discussed earlier? So you see, my friends, how it can transform literally how you look at things, how you experience things, even the things right now that are in your life. And the more you cultivate it, the more keen and the more astute and acute becomes your hearing, your spiritual hearing. You hear voices. I don't mean that in a literal sense. You sense, you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell certain dimensions that you can't usually experience because you have not exercised those more subtle muscles of the supersensory and the beyond supersensory. You're consumed with and inundated and even hypnotized and seduced by the sensory. This allows you to fine-tune, sharpen, chisel your inner tools of empathy, of love, of transcendence, of seeing something bigger. All that, as that gets sharpened, changes your life. It changes everything. It changes how you look at things. And yes, it changes how you solve problems. It also eliminates the desperation that many of us make so many mistakes. You know, you wait till the problem gets out of control. What do I do now? So you get desperate. You're drowning. You start flailing about. Fire is burning. It's out of control. You panic. Or your solutions now have to be very different ones. So instead of having all that, you can create a situation where you are not desperate. You're not acting out of desperation. You're acting proactively, planning ahead, consulting and speaking to the right people, coming up with decisions. Obviously, as I mentioned a number of times, there's an emergency. Something needs to be dealt with quickly. Remember, that intuitive, transcendent approach also sharpens your intuition, so even dealing with immediate things. But the most importantly is that it teaches you the bigger picture, the longer-term one. So may we all be blessed with the minimal problems, but we will have problems, to learn how to trust through accountability, to learn how to solve problems from within, from a more holistic and bird-eye view, to solve problems that are preventive and preemptive as opposed to symptomatic and reactive, proactive versus reactive. And in doing so, we can make a better world, a better life for ourselves. Beginning from the immediate, how we deal with our close ones, relatives, friends, family, and so on. This has been Simon Jacobson. We're here every Wednesday live at 8:30 p.m. Then it's archived, available to everyone anytime. Please be in touch. Sign up for our newsletter. Sign up for our different free offerings. Subscribe free to our website to get a wide array of material. Enjoy. Take the midlife miracle. That is for pay, but it's worth it. It's a way of finding your personal mission in life, finding that soul and discovering your personal mission. Check it out online at meaningfullife.com. Everyone be blessed. Until next week, everyone have a very empowering, enriching, proactive, soul-driven problem-solving week. Be well.